Hello and welcome to this National Life Skills Academy podcast, part of our series of short introductions to essential life-worthy skills to help guide your way. So sit back and enjoy.
So this one's going to be about quantum computing. Let's get down and dirty with quantum computing. This is believed to be the solution to many problems involving computers and in society. And if perfected and harnessed correctly, quantum computing could change medicine, communications, and begin to help in creating general artificial intelligence. Quantum computing is carried out by quantum computers. These computers need to perform computations, and in order to do so, they must exploit collective properties of quantum states, which are mathematical entities. It all sounds very complicated, so let's break that down a little, shall we? What is quantum? It's all very well and good understanding the benefits of quantum computing and how it could change the world, but it's not really very helpful if you don't actually know what it means. The word quantum in physics is the minimum amount of physical property involved in an interaction. Both quantum physics and quantum mechanics study these subatomic particles, but quantum mechanics is the study of the field once it's been turned into mathematical laws. Now, this is a fundamental theory of physics that allows us to define the properties of nature using these subatomic tiny particles. In quantum physics, a quantum state, which mentioned earlier is a mathematical entity, provides us with a probability for the outcome of a measurement, a test of physical system, to gain a numerical answer. And it is these states and their collective properties that we're able to exploit for our benefit. Now, whilst it might be difficult to get your head around, the quantum of quantum computing is just the science behind the computing. So why do we need quantum computers? Because they are very smart, smarter than the computers that we rely heavily on nowadays. These computers are called supercomputers, but sometimes these computers aren't strong enough to complete certain tasks in a very short space of time, and this is where quantum computers comes in handy. To give you an example of what a quantum computer might be asked to work out, maybe at school you'd have been asked to work on a puzzle of the layout of something based on clues given to you, like purple is next to orange, which is not next to black, and red is next to black, but it's not next to white. Now, when there are only a few variables, the number of options given to you is limited. For example, if there are only two colours, there can only be two options, but the more you add, the larger this number becomes, is extrapolated. So, if there were only 15 colours, there could now be a potential 1,307,674,386,000 combinations before you find the correct one. Well, obviously, more than 1.3 trillion is an unfathomably large amount. When it comes to quantum computing, it's nothing really. That was 15 colours. 16 colour combinations can take that up to 20 trillion combinations. So the best supercomputers that we have now really wouldn't be able to cope with that. Quantum computers are capable of creating large multi-dimensional spaces where they're able to represent and interpret these vast problems. This is something that our supercomputers are unable to achieve, meaning they cannot process the problems as efficiently as quantum computers are able to do so now. Quantum computers can also use algorithms that use something called quantum wave interference, which are used to find the solutions to the problems in this space. And once found, they'll give the answers to use in a format that we're able to fully understand through numerical values. A particularly interesting quantum algorithm that uses quantum wave interference is called Grover's Search. This algorithm is incredibly useful and efficient in finding specific things. So, for example, say you needed to find a single item from a trillion. Grover's search algorithm will be able to find the item almost immediately, about 1 second to be precise, which is much quicker than normal computers, which would take about a week to find it. Quantum computers and their algorithms are able to achieve this by checking approximately the square root of the number of items you wanted to find. And when we put this speed to other applications, we can vastly improve and increase the rate at which tasks are completed, resulting, of course, in more efficient and effective things like, I don't know, for example, cybersecurity problems or successful artificial fertilization, drug development, maybe as well as controlling traffic and optimization to prevent accidents. So what makes a quantum computer? Titan, or OLCF3, was a supercomputer built to help in a variety of science projects at the ORNL, O-R-N-L, Oak Ridge National Laboratory. The size of this supercomputer is big. It's like around 404 meters squared. So given that a supercomputer is that big and the quantum computer is even faster, quicker and smarter, you'd be forgiven for thinking that a quantum computer is bigger, but they're not. Most quantum computers are currently around 8 feet tall, 2 feet wide, and 2 feet deep. Approximately the same size as a household fridge. But there is a large box that connects to this, which controls the electronics. Now, even though there are lots of differences between classical, super, and quantum computers, they all use bits. Quantum computers use a qubit, which allows them to store information in quantum form, which can then be translated into a form that we're able to read, analyze, and make conclusions from. But there are even more complicated items that go into making a quantum computer, and these include superconductors. Superconductors and superconductivity is where a property of a certain material is able to conduct a direct electrical current, DC, without losing any energy when they're cooled. These superconductors have electrons put through them, and in turn, these electrons pair up into Cooper pairs, electrons bound together at low temperatures, and sent through a Josephson junction. This junction allows a current to continuously flow without having to apply a voltage. So a Josephson junction is made up of two or more superconductors coupled by a weak link. But before any of that can take place, the superconductors must be chilled by the superfluids. Superfluids are used to chill superconductors to theoretically the lowest temperature allowed by the laws of physics. Now, this temperature is about a hundredth of a degree above absolute zero, so that's 0 kelvins, or minus 273 degrees Celsius. It's pretty cold. If supervisors were not chilled, then they would fail to do their job. In physics, physical states have different particle properties. In gases, particles are able to move about very freely, bouncing off one another. And this is usually why we can't see gases. It's because they lack enough particles for us to actually see them. Solids, on the other hand, are very tightly packed and unable to move. However, liquids are in an in-between state between these two, and whilst they're able to move around, their movement is limited to a certain degree. And as temperatures increase, a material's particles move around more and more violently. And then there's control. Control, put simply, is a superconducting qubit. By firing protons, an elementary particle, which is the smallest discrete amount of quantum of electromagnetic radiation, we can control the qubit's behavior. And in doing so, we're able to hold, change, and read out information. And then there's superposition. A qubit on its own isn't very useful to us, but a controlled qubit is. And when we have many of these, we're able to create our computational spaces where complex problems can be examined. And this space is what makes quantum computers and supercomputers different. As supercomputers don't have the capacity for this space, resulting in slower results of complex problems. And then finally, there's something called entanglement. Entanglement allows qubits to be controlled, which are otherwise random in their behavior, to be correlated in harmony. And this is the state we can exploit. By using quantum algorithms, we can solve more complex problems in a shorter amount of time and create better solutions for those very problems. Yes, quantum computing is difficult to understand, but if we can harness it correctly and it's implemented globally, it could lead to a wide range of solutions being found much quicker than the computers we use these days. Perhaps you want to listen to that one again. I'll speak to you again soon. Take care.
Thanks for listening. We hope you found that to be informative, and you'll sign in to listen to others in the series. We look forward to any requests or feedback. See you again soon.